Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom, everybody. This is Brother Gregory, and that's what we talk about here, is the keys to the kingdom. Christ came preaching a kingdom. Now, most people would have you believe that that kingdom was someplace you go when you die. But in truth, that and in the spirit of what Christ was preaching, the kingdom is how you live your life today. And it sets you free. It sets you free from all sorts of things. At the time, it set the people free from the Corban of the Pharisees, which was a social welfare system that bound the people into a subject citizenship of Judea and eventually of Rome. And it controlled their lives in almost every aspect of their lives. And it wasn't always good for society. It became more and more decadent, more and more corrupt. And eventually they took the silver out of their Roman silver coins, and society had runaway inflation. The government was unresponsive to the needs of the people. There were all kinds of social breakdowns because people had become very dependent upon the government of Rome and the government of Judea, the government that Herod had set up, and that those systems were falling apart. We call it the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. And during that period of time, Christians were doing something uniquely different. It's uniquely different than what everybody else was doing. And they often got into trouble because the people wanted to persecute them because of that difference. Because of what they were doing that was different than what everybody else had begun to do under kings like Herod, the Hasmoneans before Herod, Augustus Caesar, who was really named Octavius. Augustus and Caesar are both offices of the empire. He was also called the emperor. And emperor, if you translate that, means commander-in-chief. And what had happened is they had gone from a republic that defended itself mostly by a militia-type military to an imperial police state that began this road to becoming a police state by policing all the other nations around them. And that's why they were in Judea. Rome was not only going through this decline and fall economically, morally, politically. Families were being torn apart. There was almost a cessation of marriage. It used to be highly dependent upon families and community. Now they were dependent upon, you know, free bread in circuses of Rome. If anybody has not caught the parallels of what I've just been describing to our own time, they're not paying attention. There was something else that was happening at that time. There were aurora borealises, northern lights, what we call them, in the skies that you could see in Rome that were so bright you could read print. You could read a letter by the light coming from the aurora borealis while you sat in Rome in the middle of the night. That's amazing. Well, we're going to get to see that again, because the same things that were going on then, at the time that you saw the political decay, the economic decay, the moral decay of the people, we're seeing a parallel of that. But there was also something going on in the sun and the moon and the stars in the heavens above. And Christ talks about seeing signs in the heavens, in the moon and the stars. What was he talking about? To say, you know, the moon and the stars, it would include the planets, include the sun. And there were events taking place on those planets, on the sun itself. That's where the aurora comes from. It comes from huge coronal mass ejections, what they call CMEs, that come from the sun, hurtle through space and strike the different planets that are revolving in orbit around the sun. been going on for thousands of years. It's actually very much a part of the natural scheme of things. But when that takes place, we see things like the Northern Lights. Now, right now, as we speak, there's actually a coronal mass ejection headed for our planet. Should be arriving today. I actually haven't looked. I could probably check that if we don't get another power failure. But it's coming towards this planet. It's going to hit it. It's from what they call an M-class flare. And it may cause some Northern Lights. Shortly after that happened, another X-class flare left the sun, exploded off of the sun. Now, these flares are carrying billions of tons of matter in the fourth state of matter, and it's headed towards the planet. Now, this has happened many times before. There have been bigger flares that have hit the planet. Back in the 1800s, there were flares that hit the planet that actually caused, like, number 9 wire used in telegraph systems to melt because the wire streams across the, you know, from pole to pole on insulators, and the electrons become so thick in the air that it actually builds up a charge. And because they only had a few arrestors in those systems back then, it actually melted some of the wires. It got so hot, just like the element in your stove, that it actually melted the wires, and they lost telegraph communications until people could go out and splice those wires. In the 1800s, we had a fairly low technological dependence. Today, we have satellite communications, satellite navigation, your planes, your trains, your automobiles all operate electronically, your refrigerator, everything. And like this morning, when the power went out, it was still dark here. It had little effect on us. I actually got a little bit of time off, didn't have to look at the hundreds of emails that come in every day. I actually got to sit down and talk with my wife a little bit. We could have lit the lanterns that are on the wall. We could have fired up the wood-cooked stove and fixed breakfast, but we had things to eat that didn't require cooking, so we didn't. But we have a wood stove in the house, so we were still going to be warm. But for several hours, we lost all communication with the outside world. Phones didn't work. Eventually, we were able to get cell phones to work. We couldn't get any data transfer, because of the power outage, it caused some towers to go down. But we were still able to eventually communicate with the outside world. But that's a relatively local power outage. Coronal mass ejections from the sun can cause total blackouts on the sunlit side of the Earth. Absolutely fuse electronic systems, power lines all across the Earth. If you had what they call a mega flare hit the Earth, that's exactly what would happen. And you might only have a couple days notice before it happened. Now, am I saying that to scare you? No, there's actually a great deal more to be afraid of. And that is that most of the people in the world today are under a strong delusion. They think they're Christians. They think they're following Christ. They think they are the church established by Christ. And they're actually doing the exact opposite. They're actually doing what Christ condemned. And they're doing it because the ministers, the pastors in their churches told them it's okay to do it. That's absolutely amazing. Now, how can I say such a bold and audacious statement? But that's actually what has taken place over the years, is this. Slowly has a new ideas about what Christ was saying have crept in. Now, many people, they'll read the Bible and they'll say, well, the Bible says this and the Bible says that. But they're reading it in the context of what they believe was going on at the time of Christ. They read it in the context of what they have been told and what they've heard about Christianity. Nobody picks up the Bible and just reads it. I mean, you're taught all kinds of things, the meaning of words, the meaning of being a Christian, the meaning of, you know, accepting Christ as your personal Savior. And I'm saying they've left out an absolutely essential element to the gospel. It's right there staring us in the face. But there's been literally a cognitive disconnect to what the gospel was really telling us all about. Now, a lot of people are going to say, well, that's crazy, that's ridiculous, never heard of such a thing, this is just some sort of cult leader talking. But the reality is, if you go back to the time of Christ, the Pharisees all studied the Torah. They read the Torah. They thought they were following what it said to do in the Torah. But Christ came and said, if you knew Moses, you would know me. But because you don't know Moses, you reject me. We see in the Bible Jesus supposedly appearing with Moses and Elijah. That's because they were in agreement. When Jesus established the church, what we call the church established by Jesus Christ, what we call by the phraseology of his holy church, meaning Jesus' holy church, holy meaning separate. When he established that, and you can look up in your law dictionary, the definition of church is, it says, the church was established by Christ. That's just what it says. That's the legal definition of church. It was this institution established by Christ. That institution was almost identical in purpose and process as what Moses established thousands of years before. Now that's crazy, right? How could that be? They were doing all these rituals and they were piling up stones and killing sheep and burning them up. And we think, well, that we don't do that anymore. Well, what if I told you they weren't doing that? When you read the Old Testament, you're making the same mistake as the Pharisees made. They read the Old Testament, and they thought they were supposed to pile up stone, kill sheep, and set them on fire, and that made God happy. Sounds pretty crazy. No wonder a lot of people have left religion. Sounds insane. But people believe it. They believe that that's God, you know, goes to all this trouble to free these people from the bondage of Egypt. What was the bondage of Egypt? You had to pay 20% of everything you earned, your labor, for 1 year, had to go to the Pharaoh. Now, you might actually go and actually work it off, or you might actually pay it with some sort of monetary exchange. But that's what the bondage of Egypt was. And that bondage increased, but basically they used the same units of measure. They've used it for thousands of years still until just a number of years ago. That's, and it may still be that way, that income tax in Egypt was still 20%. Make $1 million, pay 20%. Make $10 million, pay 20%. It's been that way since Joseph in Egypt. But there are other ways to tax people, and that's where the burden came in. So anyway, God took them out of that bondage, put them into a society where there were no taxes. There was something called free will offerings, but there was no taxes. There was no standing armies. Everybody was kind of a militia, but they were organized so well they could defeat all comers. Now, there's a movie coming out. I haven't seen it yet, but I hear nothing but atrocious things about it, and I think it's called Moses, and I'm trying to figure out how I can see it without them earning any money. I'm going to find some other fool who bought the movie, and then I'll ask to borrow it so I can see it and do a movie review on it. But they have absolutely, nobody has any clue what Moses was really doing. He was establishing a nation that didn't operate by taxes, by a king or president or prime minister that exercised authority from the top down. He was establishing a nation that operated from the ground up, could not oppress people around about them, couldn't, you know, create unjust wars, couldn't profit from wars. If you did go to war, you weren't to be profiting from that war. You had to take care of all the social welfare of your society through faith, hope, and charity, even though the word charity never appears in the Old Testament. Something called Corban appears in the Old Testament. Something called free will offerings appears in the Old Testament. And of course, that is what charity is. And it was appearing in the Old Testament to take care of the needy of society. When you sacrificed a lamb, a bullocks, or whatever, you know, you could bring all kinds of sacrifices to the altar. And the altars were actually living stones. They were men you picked. And you gave something to them, and they saw to the widows and orphans and needy of society. Now, most of society families took care of families. That's just the way it was. If your father was sick, you took care of him. But if it was more than you could handle, you needed to depend on society. So how would you get that? You would go to the church in the wilderness, the Levites. That's who the church in the wilderness, that term, church in the wilderness, is found in the New Testament in reference to the Levites, who were the called out in the wilderness to take care of the needy of society. And there's so many things in the Old Testament and the New Testaments. We've written a number of books on this. We're writing more. We put up articles almost every day. We put up one on the Levites just in the last week and had a number of people working on it, showing you what the Levites were really doing. And they were the church ministers. They weren't piling up stones, killing sheep, and setting them on fire and burning them up. That's not what the Testament says. And even though that's what you were told by Christians and Jews alike, at the time of Christ, one of the biggest and most popular religious groups of the time believed that that was a fiction and a fraud. They studied the Torah. They read the Torah. They spoke Hebrew. And they said that the Old Testament, the Tanakh, wasn't telling them to pile up dead stones, kill sheep, and set them on fire and burn them up. They said that's not what it was saying. They were saying that it was saying something entirely different. They were saying that it was talking about a social welfare system operating by charity, not like the social welfare systems that you have created for yourselves that operate by force. You call it Social Security, you call it national insurance, you call it social insurance. There's all kinds of different terms that you use for it, and you find it in every single country, and it actually undermines the morality of society. It undermines the community, the ropes and ties that bind community together that we call love and honor. The only thing that binds communities together without that is force and fear. And that's why all governments now operate on force and fear. Now, they have to create the illusion that if you go down and vote and you elect just the right guy, that somehow everything's going to be okay. But that's not the way it works. It never has worked that way. The most predominant form of government throughout the history of man is grassroots networks of people that bind themselves together with love and charity and honor for one another, respect of one another. That is the most predominant form of government. They will elect leaders, but the leaders will be titular. And that's something that your governments today, if you're in Australia or England or Canada, your leaders are not titular. They actually make laws. They extract your contributions by force. And that's the systems you set up because you think it's okay to violate the Ten Commandments now. Now, how do you violate the Ten Commandments? You covet your neighbor's goods. You join these systems to extract payments from your neighbor to benefit you, to force your neighbor to contribute to your welfare. Completely contrary to what Moses said, completely contrary to what Abraham was doing, completely contrary to what Jesus Christ said, what the apostles said, what Paul said, what Peter said. Peter said through covetousness, that desiring benefits at the expense of your neighbor, you would be made merchandise. If you want to translate that into human resources, surety for debt, all these things are terms that we can see in the Bible, either referenced directly or by words that mean exactly the same thing. So, what's this other thing? Wind, knocking out power. What does that have to do with all this? What was going on the sun? Why are we seeing aurora borealis again with another solar max coming up? What's going to happen in the future? Exactly when it's going to happen, I can't tell you. I can see it, but I can't give you a date. I'm not a date guy. I've only gotten a date a few times in my life, and they've been mostly significant for me, although very dramatic events happened on that day, but it was to show me how certain things work. It was just a personal revelation. But I'm telling you that there is a day coming when society will completely fall apart. And you can prepare for that, but you cannot be motivated out of fear. You cannot be motivated out of anxiety. You have to be motivated out of love for one another. You have to bind yourselves together with that love. So you need to do what we used to do in America, which is really what made America great, which was not the Constitution. It was the fact that men and women and children got up every morning, took care of each other and the family, and within the family, their elderly, etc. And they also took care of their neighbor through faith, hope, and charity. The more we get away from that, the more there will be a disconnect in our mind, thinking that that's okay, and it does not change us, but it does change us. And the more you go back to that scheme, that plan, that way that Christ taught and talked about, and the Essenes, who were that religious group back in those days, who didn't deal with the animal sacrifice to the temple. They said that that was wrong, that the Pharisees had misinterpreted it. They did believe in charity. They did have Passover, which was a meal, and which is actually a meal of sharing. We've talked about that in other shows and how that really works. It's not the ritual. It's the principle. It's the spiritual motivating faith that compels us to take care of one another. We have to stop and help this person. Well, this is what congregations of record are. You can call them congregations of testimony or congregations of love, that people gather together locally in small groups and start taking care of one another as much as they can, as much as they're willing to do. It can be baby steps. We have an elderly gentleman. That's where I was down this morning, taking care of him. He has bed sores that he developed in the hospital and other injuries that he developed in the hospital. And now that he's run out of money, they sent him home. And he has this huge sore on his back because they're done with him. They say they can't help him anymore. He's almost 90 years old. We've only been taking care of him a couple of weeks, and already the sore has, instead of growing like it had in the hospital, it's shrinking up. It's getting smaller. And every day we get him up, we set him up, we feed him, we taking care of him. Now, I mean, they've been whittling away at him for years now, but he's actually getting better now that he's at home and being cared for by people that have something better than pharmaceutical. Not that we don't use some of the medicines and all that stuff, but we have something that makes a difference. Love for one another, caring for one another. There's an energy and a power of healing that comes in that, that cannot come from professionals, mercenaries. It has to come from people who really care and are willing to make personal sacrifices to make that caring a reality. And while we're doing this with an elderly gentleman, we're blessed as younger men. Now, some people would call me an elderly gentleman. And they might leave off gentlemen, but certainly I'm elderly. I'm well into the retirement age, although I do not retire. As an ordained minister of the church, I don't have a social security number anymore. I had to waive my right to that property right. And I gave that up to serve Christ in the ministry. I have to give up those things to be an ordained minister of Christ. He said you had to sell all your property. I don't own any property in my name. We in the church, the ministers of the church, own all things in common, just like the Levites. The Levites belong to God. Now, this is not illegal. This is legal. I can show you this. I've gone to Washington, D.C. I've laid this out for top attorneys in the United States and said, is this legal? And they said, yes, it is. And, of course, we knew it was, but we wanted confirmation from the greater legal minds in America. But it scares them. And of course, that's why the church was persecuted, because the ordained ministers of the church back then were in the world, but they were not of the world. They were on the planet, but the word world there meant constitutional order or system of government. We explain all this in our books, which are all free online. You can download them for free. You don't have to pay us anything. I mean, if you want to order hard copies, yeah, we'll send you hard copies. We give away more than we actually sell. But, you know, we can only afford to give away so many. But we give away them online for free. And we're going to tell you more about how the early church prepared for the earthquakes and the famines and the volcanic eruptions that all were related to the events on the sun, which are occurring again now. And we'll do this when we come back from the break. And that's what we'll do in just a few moments. We'll be right back.
My name is Mark and I'm from Melbourne in Australia, and I'm a minister in the church established by Jesus Christ more than 2,000 years ago. After reading the books published at hisholychurch.org, I realised that mainstream Christianity had taken a wrong turn by forgetting what Jesus said to do, to practice pure religion while remaining unspotted from the world. What does this mean and how is this done exactly? You'll find out when you go to hisholychurch.org and discover what it truly means to love God and your neighbour as much as yourself. Join the Living Network at hisholychurch.org.
Have you ever looked at the things happening in the world today and felt that something just wasn't right, but couldn't put your finger on it? Have you ever heard the phrase, "God bless America," and wondered to yourself, does he really? Or have you ever looked at the government's policies on things such as abortion or same-sex marriage and asked yourself, how could they? Or where are all the Christians voicing their outrage? These are hard questions that many people today ask themselves. But along with those hard questions come some very hard answers. Answers that you may never heard before, but nonetheless will answer these and other questions you may have. So if you're looking for answers, join us at hisholychurch.org. It's not what you might think, and it will open the heart and mind to a whole other world that you never even knew existed. It did for me and many others. I know it will for you as well. So join us as we seek the kingdom of God and his righteousness at hisholychurch.org.
The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth as it is in heaven. Start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
For more information, contact us at hisholychurch.org or email us at radio@hisholychurch.org or write us at His Church, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. Okay, well, welcome everybody back. We're talking about what the early church was doing, what was happening in history at that particular time. There had been a shift, and this is all going to be part of our shift series we've been talking about for weeks and weeks on numerous different radio programs. And there was a shift away from the original Roman Republic, which was fashioned, believe it or not, the original Roman Republic was fashioned very much after the original Israelite Republic that was set up by Moses, which was actually following in the footsteps of the actual Republic that was set up by Abraham, who had received the blessings of Shem, his great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, nine times removed. You know, he was about nine grandfathers back. And they actually were, their altars that they were setting up, these clay altars and stone altars, were actually systems of self-government with no exercising authority that took care of the needs of people and by their nature bound societies together, peoples together, by faith, hope, and charity, so that when a five kingdom army came marching through their valleys, taking over one city-state after another, Sodom and Gomorrah, etc., etc., Abraham was able to muster an army overnight that destroyed them and defeated them. How was he able to do that? Because of his altars of charity. Because the people had become bands of brothers who had an extra power, blessing, when they faced an enemy. Well, there's all kinds of enemies in life. There are natural disasters. Some are disasters that are really not that natural, but like you can have a flood. Well, the flood might come because there was a lot of rain, but the rain might come because there was weather modification, because somebody built a dam and it decayed and broke and earthquakes busted it. You could have food shortages because somebody genetically modified the food that ended up becoming actually toxic to human beings and poisoned whole nations. That could actually happen. Or maybe it's already happened and you just don't know it yet. The point is, there's all kinds of disasters. And one of the disasters, we have people in our network that told us several days before Fukushima had its major earthquake that it was going to have its major earthquake. They actually were surprised by the preliminary earthquake that took place, you know, the day before that, because they thought, well, that shouldn't have happened for another day. And of course, that was because the really big one was happening the next day. They knew about it days ahead of time because they looked out in nature and they saw the signs of what was coming. They understood it. Actually, some of the things that the first fellow to predict this, he didn't even see all of what was going on, although he's now connecting the dots. And the one time where I had a date that was given me, which is a long story, we have it in a recording, and you know, I published papers about it ahead of time before the date occurred, and I didn't know exactly what was going to happen. I knew it was going to be significant, and it had to do with events on the sun immediately affecting events on the earth, which normally, you know, if a coronal mass ejection leaves the sun, it takes several days for it to get here. But under certain conditions, you will see the eruption on the sun and an instantaneous change on the earth. Earthquakes will be triggered, magma will rise in the volcanoes, weather will be pumped up, the number of lightning strikes per hour will increase by threefold. You'll have all these kind of strange storms, deep subterranean earthquakes, and tidal waves. All these things can be triggered by events on the sun. And they always will be. I mean, we had earthquakes in the 1814s, 1811 in America and the Midwest that if they occurred today, hundreds of thousands of people would die. We had tidal waves here on the West Coast just before Lewis and Clark arrived that wiped out entire forests, just ripped trees out of the ground for miles and miles and miles. Today, those same locations are filled with suburbs. you know, houses, row houses, and thousands upon thousands of people live there. Oil tankers unload fuel oil every day. Pipelines cross these earthquake faults like nothing's ever going to happen. Well, it will. Eventually it will. And disaster will happen and thousands will die, but we will recover. Well, the better shape we are as a society, the better we will recover. If we are not in good shape as society, you will see the decline and fall of the New World Order. Well, that's great in some ways, because a lot of that should go away. But unfortunately, people are not ready for freedom. They're not ready for liberty. They're not ready to be set free. They don't know how to live as a free people. They will have nothing but chaos because they have not used their arms and legs of righteousness. You know, in the movie Matrix, you know, he's laying there and they're explaining to him where he is. And he says, "Why don't my arms and legs work?" And he says, "Because you've never used them." Well, that's true today. You've never lived as a free society. Oh, there are men out there who think they're free and they're running around pretending to be sovereign, but they don't know what a free society is. They couldn't come together and fight off, you know, a gang war, much less an invading army, which, of course, is another thing that we're likely to face, at least in this country. I mean, America's got to be pushed out of the way in order for the rest of the tyrants of the world to do what they want. We've become a tyrant in defeating tyrants, just the same as Rome did. It became a tyrant when it was out there destroying pirates and defeating tyrants all over the world. And we need to be aware of the fact that we are incompetent and incapable of being a free society with our present skills and understanding. Once we realize that, we can start doing something about it. What is it Rumi said? You know, when I was clever, I wanted to change the world. But when I became wise, I tried to change myself. And that's really the only thing you can do is change yourself. Change the way you see things. Alter the patterns of your mind and think a different way. The reality is the patterns of our mind has already been changed by our society, by the way in which we look at things and think about things and conduct ourselves in, you know, our day-to-day events. We don't even know what a free society is. We have people, you know, celebrating, you know, holidays and Christmas and 4th of July, and this is a great nation, we're so great, and Rome was doing the same thing as they were in their decline. As a matter of fact, the more a nation is in its decline, the more it has to do that. It needs to reaffirm the fact that it believes that it's doing great and it's okay in order to support the delusion. And we need to do something different. We can't afford the luxury of imagining that we are more than what we really are. And so, to understand what that early church was doing, what the church in the wilderness was doing, how they were binding themselves together in a unified community. You know, one of the reasons that Christians were persecuted under Marcus Aurelius is that they feared the Christians. Even before that, with Antoninus Pius and other emperors, they feared the Christians. Why? Because they thought the Christians were going to rise up, you know, like these movies, this new Moses movie, and conquer the people. Jesus was preaching love. When Jesus said we are to love our neighbors as ourselves, he was quoting Moses. We have this idea that somehow Moses was going around and I said, kill them all, you know, let God sort them out. Moses didn't say that. That wasn't what Moses said. Somebody said that, and they said it about a particular enemy. Historians, archaeologists know that, actually, I was going to give you a report on the sun, and I went there to the regular government website that tells us what's happening on the sun, and they have blocked the site. Now, I don't want anybody to panic. This is not D-Day or something. This is just events, so you see how things happen. And, you know, we're back here before Christmas, in case people hear this show at a later date. But there are these interesting phenomena that are on their way to this planet that will become key when you start seeing the mega flares coming. But you don't want to be starting to get ready then. And when I say get ready, I'm not saying, you know, pack up 500 pounds of beans and head for the hills. You know, you may want 500 pounds of beans. That's up to you. I'm not going to make up your shopping list. But what you need is other people who are not just interested in surviving, but in serving one another. You don't want to be in a foxhole when the beans run out with 10 other guys that their sole motive in life is to survive because you're suddenly on the menu. You want to be somewhere with other people who care about righteousness, who tend to what Christ called the weightier matters: law, judgment, mercy, and faith. Faith. The people who will be there for you in thick and thin. And the only reason they're going to be there for you, if they're honorable people, is because they believe that you would be there for them. How do you get to that state of mind? How do you shift your congregation, your community, your neighborhood to that state of mind? You start taking care of one another in little ways, helping one another. You know, you don't go to church and mumble prayers. You go to church and said, when you say, how have you been doing? You actually want to know how he has been doing. You want to know, can I help you? Do you need help? Now, for the righteous kind of people, what you're going to find all the time is they're going to say, no, I don't need any help. I mean, they could have absolute disaster happening in their family, but they don't want to be a burden to anybody else. That's okay. I get it. But the more you start to know each other, you know he really does need help. You need to be there for him. You know, he's not going to be a whiner. He's going to be somebody who says, well, I want to help you. He's going to be polite. He's not going to be a cusser and swear. He's not going to be... Now, you may be some of those things now. We'll have to work on that. Because that lowers your thinking. It drags you into the thinking of other people who are full of hate and anger. You don't want that hate and anger. You want love and forgiveness and compassion. If you don't have those things, you won't make it in a free society. You just won't make it. If you're full of anger and resentment and unforgiveness, what the heck do you want to be free for? To spread around some more of your hate and anger and unforgiveness? It's not about rituals. You know, this is how we got into trouble. We unmoored what we thought were the rituals of the Old Testament from their meaning and purpose, and turned them into mindless animal sacrifices where you just burned up these animals and burned up, you know, like if you, a sin offering was supposed to be a turtle dove. Somehow or other, people got it in their mind that if I kill a turtle dove and burn it up, then my sin is absolved, because they think that's what it says in the Bible. Now, the guys who told you that, did they also tell you that the same word for turtle dove means a piece of your estate? In other words, if you damage somebody, you injure somebody, and you can't pay back recompense to that individual, you need to take a piece of your estate, something you have, something you value, and give it up for other people. Gandhi, during some of the riots in India between Muslims and Hindus, Gandhi was going to fast until the rioting stopped. And he was literally on his deathbed. They thought he was going to die. And a Muslim came and said, I am going to hell because I have murdered a Hindu child. I killed a Hindu child. But I will not have the blood of a prophet, a blood of a holy man on my conscience too. So I will throw down my machete and I will stop the violence if you will eat. And that was the deal. He wasn't going to eat till they stopped the violence. And he whispers to the guy that he knows how the man may be saved, that he isn't going to be condemned. And he said, the guy was curious, how could I be saved? I've murdered an innocent child in my hate, in my rage. You see the same thing going on now in the world. You think that hate and rage is just a product of those people? It's a product of nature of society. There's a collective unconsciousness, there's a collective consciousness. Now, those of you who are susceptible to that hate and rage, and that's why I say, you know, cussing and swearing, it drags you into that pattern of thinking. You're actually being caught up in a current, a spiritual quantum current of thought that will drag you into mass hysteria, and you will be killing each other in the worst Holocaust imaginable. Now, if you want to be immune to that, you need to start to forgive. You need to start to practice love on a daily basis for one another. It will cure your depression. It will cure your anxieties. It will cure your fear. You will become fearless. When you walk in a room, you will light up that room. People will heal of sicknesses and illnesses, both physical and mental illnesses. They will heal of that, if they too are receptive to the light you bring in. Now, you don't create that light. You receive that light. But if you're full of hate and anger and cussing and swearing, you're going to draw the dark side to you. You know, it will take over and dominate your life. But anyway, Gandhi says to this fellow, you must find an orphan who was killed by his, you know, whose parents were killed during all this rioting and fighting and murder and mayhem. And you must raise him as your own son, because that's why he killed the Hindu son. It's because somebody had killed his son, you know, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth, which had nothing to do with revenge. That's another thing. If we get time, I'll get to that. Why that has nothing to do with revenge. Why Moses said that. You'll be shocked to find out why Moses said that. But it's obvious. But you have to break out of the rut, the religious rut in which your brain now travels, and realize that you have been deceived. You have to have the humility to realize that you have been deceived so that you may hear the truth. Not just with your ears, because you can't learn this in the tree of knowledge. You're only going to get this over there in the tree of life. But Gandhi says to him, you have to raise that child, not as a Muslim, as a Hindu. And then you will be saved. Now, is that like some sort of automatic recipe for salvation? No. The man will not be able to do that until he forgives. And why did Christ say to forgive? So that ye may be forgiven. Why is that? Because in the quantum physics of spirituality, when you truly forgive somebody, you fill in the rut. You won't fall down into that rut of judgment and hate and anger that will draw you into a society where you become a slave. Because the last thing in the world you want is to enslave your neighbor. Because of your covetous practices, you have become a slave. It is not the Federal Reserve. It is not the New World Order. It is not any of those guys. They have no power. They are darkness. The reason your nation is going down the tubes and all the other nations of the world is going down the tubes economically, morally, spiritually, and even geologically is because you won't forgive. You won't live by love. And because of that, you cannot see the evil that is all about you. And you are being dragged along in this collective unconscious consciousness into realms of iniquity and darkness and destruction with all the other people that are going down that wide road. And you need to repent and turn around. Now, it's not a mental choice. It's not like, okay, I get it. I'm going to repent today. And like you make a decision, you know, make a note in your diary. Today, repent. No, you have to begin to see. You know, it always said that they repented, got baptized, and confessed. They didn't go to a confessional and sit down with a priest and confess. But they admitted, oh my gosh, Social Security, public education, Medicare, Medicaid. They are systems based on covetousness. I want benefits at the expense of my neighbor. Oh, I know you're all going to say, well, we paid in and we have a right to take these things. You paid in, suppose this is the way the society used to work. You paid in because you loved your neighbor. You treat it like it's a debt, like they got to pay you back now because you paid into them, like it was some sort of contract. Well, that's exactly what it was, except for the leaders you picked because you were so blinded by your own greed. They robbed it and it's bankrupt. Social Security today is bankrupt. Anybody who tells you it's not, you need to go read the article that we've got on there. Not so secure Social Security. It is bankrupt. Supreme Court says it. The head of the GOA says it. I mean, it's just a matter of math. Oh, you heard it on the news that it isn't bankrupt. Oh, okay. Well, there you go. I mean, that's like seeing it on the net. It doesn't work that way. It's bankrupt. So if you want anything out of those systems, it's coming out of the future of your children. That's why every child in the world today is born in debt. A little cute baby, you know, nice little cute baby. $54,000 in debt. You tell me that's not bondage? Debt is slavery. Now, what can you do about it? Absolutely nothing. You can't change that, but you can change yourself. You can start going another way. And if enough of you start going the other way and come together doing it in congregations of testimony, testifying that there is a better way, showing people there is a better way, you will start to see the healings that we have seen. You will start to see the awakening that we are seeing. Join with us. Join the Living Network. Go to livingnetwork.org. It'll probably take you to preparingyou.com. And join in your area. It's just an email network. You join in that email network. But then it's based on geography. Then you can start joining with other people. Now, you don't have to do anything. You know, you don't have to send me $1,500. You don't get a special freedom package. All this other mumbo jumbo I've seen for decades upon decades. It just get one person into trouble after another. But you can start turning around and going the other way as a society, as a people. If you as an individual are willing to make those changes, then you'll start finding other individuals. And they will not come walking on water. They will not come as saints. They will not come perfect. They will come flawed. We get the walking wounded every day. But we're into healing. We're into changing. You've been wounded by pharmaceutical, by drugs, illegal and otherwise. You've been wounded by abuse, by neglect, by your education, your formal education. Your degree of knowledge has barred you and changed you into a prison of thinking and being and acting. If you want to be free, you need to be free of that individual prison with the intent of freeing others and bringing light where there is darkness. Unfortunately, when you bring light where there is darkness, you get to see your errors, your mistakes. That's where the confession comes in. You need to be willing to see that, to overcome that, to be what Christ wants you to be. Then you will become a conduit of the Holy Spirit. You will be able to change things about you without even doing anything but tending to the weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith, because you love one another as Christ loved you. Until then, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.